Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Carl Wonders.
And I'm Thad Haight.
Today we're going to finish out the first season of Columbo with the episode Blueprint for Murder.
So, as I seem to recall from your discussion, production talk in previous episodes, this episode is basically a filler episode, right?
No, that was the last, that was the short fuse, the Freddie McDowell one.
Okay, I thought they both were.
No, so this was originally the final episode, and it was always planned to be the final episode.
Gotcha.
And I think that they actually filmed this before. And then, in fact, if you pay attention, the killer, Elliot Markham's office and desk is exactly the same office and desk that James Gregory was using in Short Fuse.
I noticed that, actually.
So another fun fact, the Elliot Markham's car is the same car that Jack Cassidy drove in Murder by the Book.
Oh, okay. It's been long enough since we watched that one that I didn't notice that.
I was reading the trivia.
Gotcha.
And this is the one we talked a couple times about how Peter Falk strong-armed the producers into getting to direct an episode, and this is the one that he ended up directing. And it's the only one he's directed, so.
I mean, I have nothing bad to say about the direction of this episode. It seems he did a competent job.
Yeah, I'd agree. Nothing jumps out quite like the Steven Spielberg or the weird strobe effects that they were doing in some of the other episodes, but it certainly is competent.
Or the cleaning up the murder scene from by looking at, while looking through the glasses.
That's always going to be the favorite, I think.
Yeah. I know you have said that Peter Falk had quite a reputation for being hard to work with. So I imagine that probably also carried through to directing and makes a production in general just harder.
It may have. I mean, his reputation was really that he would do a lot of takes. He always wanted to kind of do different things. And he was one of those people who was always kind of down on his own performance sometimes, where he would say, oh, I don't think we did this. I don't think I did it quite right. Can we do another take on this? And he was generally slow to film things. And I don't know how that translated over into directing. I think Levinson and Link have said that he did an excellent job.
Okay.
He certainly had a lot of variables to consider, since a lot of this is filmed at a building site and other places that couldn't have been easy to shoot in. It felt like there's a lot more location work in this one than in some other episodes we've seen.
Yeah.
And I think that some of that was actually on purpose, because Levinson and Link were like, well, okay, you're being a jerk about directing. We're going to give you one that's really hard to do, and that'll show you.
So. And I think part of that also would be, there's a common thing that happens when an actor directs themselves in a TV show, is that that actor will appear less than they might normally have in the show. Obviously, in Columbo, you can't just do an episode without Columbo. But by doing all of these location shooting with all these establishing shots and whatnot, it does give him less screen time, I think.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. It's not like you can have Klingon venom in your face and put into stasis for the entire episode, like
right.
Vince McFadden did in Genesis.
Or, I mean, when Patrick Stewart did Fistful of Data's, like, I think he had like one scene
playing his flute. Yeah, so this one is all about an architect who wants to build a city out, I guess, off of LA using some rich guy's money, and the rich guy doesn't take well to that. And
well, the rich guy doesn't take well to just him going forward with his money without asking, which is a valid complaint.
I think so, yeah.
That said, if you are going to be this rich guy and you're going to go off to Europe and like make yourself impossible to contact for 8 weeks, yeah, maybe your wife shouldn't make huge decisions like that while you're away, but also, you're not making this easy.
No, and we don't know what that relationship is, or I always assumed that Markham was sleeping with the wife.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I think Bo Williamson, the victim, is the most Texan I've ever seen on screen. at least until Dallas comes around, you know. The guy has Colt 45 decorations on the door handles of his car, for goodness sake. Which I hadn't noticed, and then I thought he had like a gun stuck there, and then I realized that, no, that's just the decor of his car.
I completely missed that, actually.
Okay. The door handles of his car have guns on them.
Yes, they do. Oh, my God.
And he has like a giant, some kind of animal on his hood ornament.
I thought it was a cow.
I thought maybe it was a cow, too. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a cow, but it could be a horse. Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if we ever get a close-up shot.
We'll probably do at some point.
Oh, when Markham drives the car into the... Oh, no. Here, when he's getting into the car at the... It's a horse.
Okay.
And that makes sense, because he's got, like, his horse... He's got his horse farm, or whatever you call that.
Yeah.
Ranch.
I have a comment about that in a little bit.
Those door handles, though. You figure that's a real thing, or... just something they mocked up for this episode? Or was that like an option you could actually get?
I'm assuming it's just something they did.
Like, I doubt you could get that from the factory. But like, yeah. I was just wondering if there was like a company that catered to rich Texans that would give you Colt 45 door handles.
I mean, other than Cadillac?
I mean, I don't think Cadillac would do it, but you never know.
It's funny now how Cadillac is seen as this professional athletes and hip-hop artists and people like that tend to be the ones that drive Cadillacs anymore. And back in the when I was growing up, that was like the old person car.
Oh yeah.
My grandparents, that's all my grandfather ever bought, as far as I can recall, is a Cadillac. So
well, it was like the rich old person car, but
yeah,
for sure. Like, because they, I mean, they were always, it was always, a, it was a luxury car. It was a comfortable car. It was not it was not an exciting car.
It was a very large car. I mean,
yes.
Especially for my 70s standards.
I was going to say, were there small cars in the 70s?
Not really, no.
Did they still make Volkswagen Beetles in the 70s? Maybe those, that counts as a small car in the 70s?
May have. I was commenting on Elliot Markham's tie and how it's a choice.
Oh, the pale blue and orange one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing.
That looks like it's made out of felt.
It's like halfway between a necktie and an ascot.
Right. Another one of those.
He ties it with a full Windsor, too.
No, it's anything to make it bigger.
I guess. It is clever of him to go to into the house and pack a suitcase.
Oh, after he murders him? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I was looking at the tie, and that was a good shot of it, was when he was doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so Williamson came to the office and smashed up the model of the city because he's mad that he's proceeding without his approval, and then Markham goes back to the office later and finds it there.
Well, he tries to call Williamson's wife, but she's at a... at a health retreat and cannot be contacted in any way.
Correct.
What is with these people and having no way of contacting them?
Maybe she's in rehab. They don't want to say that. And why is Markham, or not Markham, why is Williamson wearing like Han Solo's jacket?
I was really wondering what's up with the wool jacket. Like the
is it that cold?
Yeah, he's about to go bomb the Jerry's. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, it's super thick too. Like, I guess it must be cold. That must explain the outfits.
Yeah,
because it's a puffy vest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be cold. Like, it feels weird that it would be so cold because all the trees are green. But
yeah,
I don't know. They're also Californians, so for them, cold is probably like 60 degrees.
Yeah, and he's also from Texas, so I'm assuming he's lived in L.A. for a while. Mm-hmm. So he has this conversation with the jockey about the horse and everything, and I just was like, did no one ask the jockey about this conversation that he has with the guy when he disappears?
Probably no one knew he had the conversation with the jockey.
Well, maybe.
Probably no one knew he even went to the ranch.
Well, because they didn't ask the jockey, I guess. Well,
yeah.
How does Markham get in the back of his car?
I guess he didn't lock it?
When did he get in the back of his car?
It could have at any point when he was, you know, with the horse.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I hadn't seen this one in a while, and I had to go back once because I didn't miss anything. Like, all of a sudden, Markham just, like, pops up in the back seat.
Yeah, no, he doesn't unlock the car. He just walks up and opens it. So it wasn't locked and the windows down, so, like, it would have been easy for Markham to get in there.
Okay, well, how did Markham get to the ranch then?
I mean, I guess he did an Uber. Yeah, I don't know. That is an excellent question. How did he get to the ranch? And then how did he get home from... Well, I guess from the airport, it's easy to get a taxi.
Yeah, take a taxi from the airport.
That's, maybe he took a taxi to the ranch, too.
Maybe. And then one thing that did bug me when I was watching this is he... So Markham, like, pulls a gun on him.
Mm-hmm. He should have just grabbed his... Bo should have just defended himself with his door handle.
Well, that was my thing. Like, Bo was always very in your face and, like, even smacks him, like, in on the cheek at that one point in the... Mm-hmm. At, like, you'd think he would... at least yell at him or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems very out of character for him to just give up and get out of the car.
Yes, I agree. Right. But I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. It's having a gun pulled on you is kind of frightening.
True.
Yeah. I assume. I've actually never had anyone pull a gun on me, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, too. But yeah, that could be. So we see him get marched into some storage shed or whatever it is, and that's the last we see of Bo Williamson. Until the very end of the episode.
Yeah, but we do see the murderer driving to Williamson's ranch. And even though it's bright daylight, we still get the astigmatism camera.
Including, like, the sunlight reflected in the window at the car at one point.
Yes, the window of the car and on the headlights. The sunlight's reflecting off them.
Well, yeah. this is just clearly a day for night thing.
Is it supposed to be night?
That's my guess. It looks like a day. It looks like day.
It looks because it sure doesn't look. I assumed it was day. This looks like day to me. I mean, it would make sense if it was night for.
Yeah, I mean, he turns the lamp on in the house.
When he goes inside, it's pitch black. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just another bad day for night.
Really bad day for night. Like, it doesn't look even slightly like night when he's driving to the. But yeah, the lights are on at the at the gate. So that's like to indicate that it's actually night, even though it's clearly not.
Yep. It's not quite as bad as George Lazenby being in broad daylight in the middle of a ski chase. But
or beating up those people on the beach.
Yeah. Yes. This is more like that. And then we cut to a presentation at the building site. It seems like Elliot Markham has reinvented buildings or something.
And, of course, Columbo is being Columbo.
Yeah. So, once again, why is Columbo here? There's no murder. They're not even sure if somebody has disappeared.
Can we take what he says at face value? Where he says that they got a call, that the police department got a call that set... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why. He's there because they got a call, and so they're coming to talk to his wife, and they find out his wife is there.
Right, but he's a homicide detective. He's not missing persons.
Oh, that's an excellent question, yeah.
Like, you know, this is another one of those examples of LAPD has one person.
Yeah, okay, fair.
I like the exchange with the guard where he's like...
Hey, where are you going? Over there. No one's allowed in there.
No, I see 30 people down there.
No one's allowed in there without an invitation. You have an invitation?
No, I don't have an invitation.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. You have no invitation, so...
Actually, I'm a lieutenant in the police. My name is Columbo.
Lieutenant?
You know, when I came here, I'm just coming here to look for somebody.
Who are you looking for, Lieutenant?
Mrs. Williamson.
Well, I'll tell you, Lieutenant. A lot of people here. Why don't you wander around? Maybe you'll bump into her.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay.
That security guard looked vaguely familiar, but I didn't recognize anything that he had been in.
He's not like one of the regulars from Columbo either.
I think it's just I see these people and it's because they have 70s. They're stereotypical 70s people. Yeah. That it's just like, oh, I've seen someone like that before.
That's fair.
Like, nobody wears their hair like that anymore.
Oh, I have one hair comment coming up a little later.
Not that there's anything wrong with his hair, but nobody wears their hair like that anymore.
Wait, which guy? The guard?
Yeah. He's got that big, like, I'm not even sure that's real hair.
He's got, like, season 3 Scotty hair.
Yeah. But I'm not even sure it's real hair on the security guard. It might actually be.
No, I don't think it is. It very much probably is not. He meets Williamson's wife and he says, I got a call from Mrs. Williamson about your husband's gone missing. And she says, I didn't make a call. And he is confused. And we get introduced to her by her saying, "I'm not the brightest lady in the world, but," I'm like, that's a heck of a way to introduce somebody. Anyway,
I mean, I could see someone saying that in that conversation when they say, "But I know whether I made a phone call or not," I could see someone saying that. Yeah, that doesn't seem that weird.
I don't think she shows quite as well as Goldie in a lot of these scenes.
No,
but
Goldie's certainly more memorable.
Yeah,
in part because she's always calling Columbo lover.
Lover. Do you call everyone that? Is that your term of endearment of choice?
My headcanon wants to be that she only calls Columbo that. Like, that's I really want that to be the case. That it's like, it's her nickname for Columbo specifically, is what I want it to be. Like, because she also wants to take him out for drinks.
That's true. And she kisses him at one point. But here's where she's getting a massage and talking to Columbo, and she puts on her robe and says, "Would you like to turn around so I don't corrupt you?"
Yes. And she reveals that Williamson always calls her before he goes on any trip.
Yep.
And since he didn't call this time, that must mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that's it's quite a maneuver she does changing in front of Columbo. Like, yeah. Why did she bother putting the robe on first if she was going to make him turn around? And then she takes the towel off while still wearing the robe and sort of like shimmies it off.
I chalk that up to 70s television standards more than anything else.
Yeah, but like someone wouldn't do that in real life.
No.
Because if you're going to make them turn around anyway, then you might as well just, you know, do the full Monty.
I think normally they would go to another room, but apparently this giant bedroom is the only room they have in that house because it's the only one we see.
It's possible. That headboard looks comfortable, though.
It does. It's quite large.
Looks very, very soft to, like, mm-hmm. Lean against to read a book.
Yeah. Especially if you didn't have to share it, because then you could be in the middle where it's
tall really enough. High.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the side, my head would hit that wooden framing, and that wouldn't
feel very good. I don't care for the fringe on the table lamp, though.
I was just looking at that.
Oh, and here is a close-up of the horse on the car. It's right after this scene.
Okay. Oh, yes, it is a horse. So again, we're having the effect of the show being called Columbo, because why is Columbo being sent out to retrieve the car at the airport?
Well, I think he wanted to investigate it. And that's why everybody's sitting around waiting for him to do something.
Also, Markham parks like a dick because the steering wheel's upside down.
Oh, yeah. I never do that because it'll screw me up.
I always forget when I leave.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I always make sure I put the steering wheel, turn the wheels back straight before I get out of the car because, yeah, I'm not going to remember the next time I get in my car. So, yeah, we see Columbo is looking at the tape deck, which 1972, quite impressive that he has not only a cassette player in his car, but has a huge library of cassettes in his car.
Mm-hmm.
Audio cassettes were certainly quite new on the scene at that point. I mean, I guess it's a sign that he's a rich guy, but like normally you would be much more likely to find an 8-track player in a car in 72.
It's this mounted thing underneath the dashboard.
Right, which means it's probably aftermarket, I would assume. And it has just an AM radio.
Which is typical of the 70s.
Yes. Was FM radio a thing and just not in cars, or was it not really a thing at all? I honestly don't know.
FM radio first appeared in cars in 1952 when the German company Blaupunkt introduced the first car ready. Yeah, it was full availability in major Ford and GM models by 1963, but we don't know how old this car is either.
That's also true. But also, we were talking before the recording. My dad had a Ford Escort from the 80s that just had an AM radio.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a thing long after. I mean, that car also didn't have air conditioning, so like it was a bare basic car. But this was a thing long after this that cars would only have AM radios.
No, and I remember my grandfather having a Cadillac from the 80s that had an FM radio, and we didn't have one until the mid 80s, whatever, when my dad got rid of his giant like the bigger of the two cars we had, because we had the Ford Escort as well. I think it was probably the same similar car, the one you remember.
Probably. Was yours blue?
It was blue. Like a sky blue kind of.
Yep, yep. And very boxy.
Yeah. Right? Did it have that pleather trim around the seats that got blazing hot in the sun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh. Yep, you're describing my dad's car. My dad had kept his until mid-90s.
Ooh. So I don't think we've mentioned that the big clue here is that he has all these country western tapes, and Columbo turns the radio on and it's the classical station playing.
Yeah.
Which immediately piques his interest.
Killer always messes up somehow.
Yep.
So, okay. So Columbo figures out something's up because of the music.
Mm-hmm.
What was Markham's plan if Columbo hadn't done that?
Well, so that was my point at the very end. So the whole thing is that eventually Markham goads Columbo into digging up a pile of the building they're building, because he says, oh, you must have hidden the body in the pile, and then they pour the concrete and you'll never find it. And they pull it up and there's nothing there. And then Columbo catches him to put the body into the new fitting that they're going to re-pour. What was his plan up until that point?
Right. Like if Columbo hadn't decided to dig up the pile.
Right. Was he just going to leave Williamson in the storage shed to rot away? Like,
I mean, that would have been a bad plan, too. But like, at least that would have been less incriminating for him if he had.
Yeah.
What you said before we were recording was, and this is what I figured would have made more sense, too, is hide it in the second pile to pour after his death.
Yeah. Or, it wasn't there, so we're going to leave. And then eventually they're going to pour a second one. So then put the body in there. Yeah. But yeah, don't do the one right after. Do one later. Yeah.
I was really wondering what was going to. I thought maybe that's what had happened at first when they didn't find the body. And I was wondering how this is going to happen. And then he goes to get the body. I'm like, oh, OK, And at that point, I thought what was actually going to happen was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then the show throws us a curveball.
Yes, it does. Yeah, he's driving to the building site and his tire blows out. And then the traffic cop or the motorcycle cop comes up, knocks on the window and asks for his license and registration, and then says, you did a great job driving.
It was weird. Like, yeah.
And then he's like, here, I'll stick around and help you. You know, change the spare or put the spare on. And Markham's like, shit, because I have a body in the trunk.
Yes. Also, like, he got that spare out super easily after the cop leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to the trunk. He just gets that spare right out. Like, was it not?
Well, it's another way of showing you just how big these damn cars were in the 70s, because the spare is in the trunk on the side vertically in the car in the trunk.
Was it vertical in the trunk?
Yeah,
was that how like people did it back then?
I guess. I mean, cars don't even come with spares anymore.
My car has a spare.
I didn't get a spare. I got a can of Run Flat.
No, I have a spare. I mean, it's a donut, but
yeah.
Cars certainly don't come with full size spares like that one.
No,
but I have a donut underneath it's under my trunk. Like I pull up the whatever you call the carpeting, I guess.
Yeah. No, like if you skip ahead, like the spare is just kind of sitting in the wheel well.
Is that something they just did that for this episode, or is that just how it was?
I don't know.
We need somebody who listens to this podcast and drove a car in the 70s.
Drove a Mercedes in the 70s.
Yeah.
So Stephen Bochco wrote this episode, and he also wrote Murder by the Book. And apparently that scene was supposed to be in Murder by the Book, but they had to cut it out for time.
Oh, okay. That would have made sense in that.
Because it's another case of guy driving a car with a body in the trunk.
Yeah. No, that would have made perfect sense.
Yeah. So in the meantime, we find out that Williamson had an appointment with a doctor, and Goldie is like, oh, he never would have skipped doctor's appointment.
And the doctor.
The doctor is played by John Fiedler.
Who Carl and I know as Jack the Ripper from that one terrible episode of Star Trek.
Wolf in the Fold. I'm not clicking my light for that episode.
That is such a bad episode. And also, even as a kid, I had a what the fuck reaction to we need to make sure that Scotty has a good experience with women here on this planet, or he'll become resentful and hate women forever.
And I'm just because like, that's how people work, I guess.
Because a woman caused the explosion that hurt him.
Oh, God.
What the hell?
I cannot remember the last time I watched that episode.
I watched all of TOS for the 50th anniversary. I watched that one. I don't think it was the first time. It was certainly the first time in a very long time. And I was like, oh, boy. Speaking of which, before we got onto this rabbit hole, John Fiedler, who played Jack the Ripper in Wolf in the Fold, is probably more famous for being the voice of Piglet for Disney's Winnie the Pooh films for like 50 years.
Yes. And he plays John Fiedler in this episode.
Yeah.
All right, Doc. Listen, I want to thank you very much for the time and for the checkup.
Well, it wasn't much of a checkup, but you're welcome. Now, if you locate Mr. Williamson, tell him to contact me immediately.
Right. I will. I'll do that.
Are you looking for something?
Do you have a lighter?
You won't find one here, Lieutenant. And let me give you some free medical advice. Stop smoking those things.
Well, I've been trying.
Trying isn't good enough. Remember, I deal in pacemakers.
I like the recurring thing where Columbo is like is not smoking after this, though.
And I think they thought that they were going to just go with that, and then they realized that it was too good of a prop to give up, so they...
Yeah.
He's going to smoke... Like, next episode, in the start of the second season, he's smoking cigars again.
Sure.
We get a moment of some rather poor acting here with Markham and Mrs. Williamson playing tennis, and then she finds this hat that looks like had barbecue sauce spilled on it.
Maybe it was barbecue sauce.
No, Goldie cut her leg on purpose. That's right, and put blood on it.
Okay. And so do you think Goldie knew about the blood types?
No.
Or if that was just a coincidence?
I think that was just a coincidence.
I mean, I'll give them some credit for that. It's darker red than some blood you see in stuff from this era.
True. It doesn't look real, but it looks not like somebody threw Campbell's tomato soup at you.
You watch a bunch of action movies from the early 80s, and they're just like,
man.
Yeah. It does look like tomato soup, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Commando, I think, is a particularly bad example of that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Trying to see what whiskey they're drinking, but he never turns the label around.
No. I was just stuck on the tall glass again, but at least it's not, the ice cube isn't too big.
I'm confused why he pours more in while he still has like a couple fingers in there.
It's probably been, maybe it's been watered down by this point.
Yes.
I'm actually thinking you weren't supposed to see the label because at one point Columbo turns the bottle so that you can't see the front of the label.
They don't want to give any advertising to, you know, the Glenlivet company or whatever. That's probably something really cheap. That's why they can't sell the label. It's like Banker's Club or something.
Banker's Club.
I don't think that's actually... Like, in my head, that was a cheap whiskey, but I don't think it is. I don't think that's a thing at all.
Banker's Club whiskey is a thing.
Okay.
Presents a clean, crisp aroma with a hint of sweetness. 1.75 liters for $14.99.
Okay, so yes, that is exactly what I was thinking of. Okay.
That's not much more expensive than a 2 liter of Coke is these days.
2 liter of Coke is cheaper than that.
I said not much.
Like, I assume twice. Having not bought a bottle of 2 liter bottle of soda in years, but like I'm thinking like you can get like a 20 ounce bottle of soda for like $3. So
okay, at Walmart you can get one for $2.47.
Right.
I still stand by my original comment that $14.99 is very cheap for almost 2 liters of whiskey.
2 liters of whiskey in 2025 is, yes, for $15 is very cheap for that.
to give you a sense of how cheap the Banker's Club is, 750 milliliter bottle of Evan Williams Cinnamon Fire is $16.99.
Oh, God.
So you get a full liter more for $2 less.
I bought a bottle of pineapple scotch for somebody as a gag gift. And I think it cost at least that much. God. Yeah, no, I was meeting up with some friends for the weekend. One of them asked, hey, could you stop at the liquor store and pick me up a couple specific things. I'm like, sure. So while I was there, I also grabbed I saw the pineapple scotch. I'm like, I gotta. It, by the way, in case you're wondering, yes, it's just as gross as you think it is. That's why I'm wondering if maybe it was just a really cheap whiskey, or it's either they didn't want to provide advertising, or it was a really cheap bottle and they didn't, so they weren't going to show this guy drinking the. I just love the fact that it's just pervasive. There are just ashtrays everywhere in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Ashtrays and bars, and there's an ice bucket right to his
there's
right
another to his bar left, with so. An ice bucket. Okay, in this case it's someone actively drinking, so I will excuse the ice bucket in this instance.
Because he's already drinking. He's not just going to make a drink. Yeah. I love how in the 70s, too, everybody had phones with like 40-foot cords that you could pick up a phone and carry it across the room.
I can hear the noise when you set down that phone. Like in my head. I know exactly the noise. Yeah.
Yep.
I had the slightly more modern one of those for work for years, actually. The one that looks like the hotel phone that is basically that, just with the push buttons instead of the dial.
Mm-hmm.
And is tan. I had one of those for years for work. We were required to use a landline. The system would call us and then we would be on the phone with our headset plugged into the phone until the end of our time. But yeah,
there will be an episode, I want to say in the fourth season, that has that exact phone as a key plot point at some point. So, yeah,
I think I still have mine in a box somewhere. Not that I have any use for it. I no longer have. I just remember after like a week of when I worked an early shift, after about a week of hearing that goddamn ringer at the start of every shift, I like opened the thing up and took out all of the ringing parts.
Nice.
Because I did not need that at 6 in the morning. Not when it was, you know, sitting on the desk, like, really near. No. Then I had to always guess when it was calling. Like, I had to, like, press the button and then, like, I got it right. Yeah, so it turns out, yes, the body was, the hat was planted by the ex-wife because she was trying to keep the investigation going.
Yeah. In between, Markham is stewing in his office. Like, the hat shows up, and then Columbo finds that this is after he's been drinking at the bar, and Columbo says, oh, the blood type's the same. And Markham's stewing in his office. Some random guy with the worst 70s hair I think I've ever seen shows up for this one little moment.
Yep.
And that is certainly a look, but he's in there playing his classical music again.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that can't possibly be real hair.
I hope not. But even if it's not real hair, why would you choose to look like that? That's borderline like early season 2 Chekhov wearing a woman's wig hair.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, I wore a cheap $10 wig. I've worn cheap $10 cosplay wigs that didn't look that bad. We've seen this exact intercom before as well.
Yeah, I think they're pretty standard. Standard issue. They probably standard issue for real, too. But
well, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's probably just from the phone company.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Okay.
Like all the phones.
Right. I had to put myself in the mindset of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I appreciate that her intercom, phone, and typewriter are all color coordinated.
Yes. Was that sea green?
Kind of, yeah.
Well, or I guess it's avocado is what they call it.
No, it's not. No, it's too blue.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't really seen much that color, but I don't know. It's just consistent color here.
I've seen other early computers that had that same color as that typewriter. Mm. The typewriter mm-hmm. is actually slightly paler than the phone and the intercom. Yeah. So now Columbo's going to go find out about digging up the pile. And he waits in the long line.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear the guy behind him looks familiar. But I couldn't find him on IMDb.
Yeah, because he kind of pulls up or comes around the corner. He couldn't be another one of those generically 70s people.
He comes out of the room the same time as Columbo does and then gets in line, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. The guy in the gray jacket and the red shirt.
And like the orange, red-orange shirt. Yeah, like the hair, the face. I feel like I want to say I saw him on Star Trek, but it could just be, again, we're looking at like a 70s hairstyle.
Yeah.
Or late 60s.
Yeah, and that guy's probably just an extra.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I like this government guy who tells Columbo all the stuff he needs. He needs to go to another department, and Columbo goes to the other department and comes back, and the guy's trying to eat his sandwich, and he's on lunch break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's lunch hour while he's lunch sitting hour, at his yeah. desk eating a sandwich. Like,
yep.
What do you do for the other 55 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably smokes at least once.
Well, I would assume. That goes without saying. It's the 70s.
Yep. But yeah, he gets his permit to dig up the pile, and they don't find anything.
And Goldie asks if he'll lose his job, and he says he doesn't know.
Yeah.
And now, yes, now Markham goes, retrieves the body, gets pulled over by the cop, tells the cop the spare is out of air, so he can't. Which, is that a problem that happens? Because I'm now just thinking about the fact that I've owned my car for 10 years and have never looked at the spare. Mm-hmm. Is that something that I need to check?
I don't know. I thought it was a fairly clever way of getting rid of the motorcycle cop.
Yes, it was.
Another bit of trivia I just read is that in the scene when they're digging up the pile and they have the crowds there and the television crews there and everything, the studio was only going to pay for 8 extras, which wouldn't fill up that space by any means.
Right.
And Falk actually paid 25 extras himself to be in the scene just so they could fill out the crowd.
Yeah, no, that spare tire is just mounted vertically in yeah. the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
How fucking big were these cars?
I mean, the tire isn't that big as far as tires go, but yeah. still, yeah.
Also, I wonder if it was a real spare tire with the way it bounces when he puts it down. Like, I feel like that was pretty light.
Yeah.
Does it have no rim? Do you have to mount it on the rim?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to drive down that slope into the building site with a donut.
No, it's they didn't have donuts then. That's a full size. Yeah.
I mean, no, but you know what I mean.
No, there is a rim. I can see it in the. Okay. You can see the rim. It's just okay. Like, I wonder if it's like a prop that doesn't weigh as much as an actual tire, spare tire would.
That could be William Shatner and his styrofoam rocks. But yeah, he pulls in and they're like, "Hello, Mr. Markham." And he just turns the lights on and all the cops are there waiting.
Yep.
How much time has passed? Because.
Well, this type of ending has happened before.
Yes. No, my question, though, is like, how gross has Bo Williamson gotten by this point?
So when he first pulls off the body, he makes a face. And yeah. I think that's because of the smell.
Yeah. Because.
Also, I would think his car would reek, even with it in the trunk. And you'd expect the traffic cop to be like, what's that smell?
Yeah.
I'm wondering about Columbo and how long were Columbo and all those cops just hanging out waiting?
All night.
Right, because he had to stop and change a tire at one point. They didn't know how far he had to come from. Yeah. No. The overtime for those cops probably cost him as much as digging up that pile did.
Well, and that's my other point. Like, I get that they caught the murder and everything, but that's still a very expensive way of catching this guy, because they still did dig up the pile and have to re-pour it and all that stuff. And city's paying a lot of money for this guy.
Well, maybe the construction project won't continue now that, you know.
Well, I mean, it's just the architect. It's not.
Yeah, it's true.
I guess it would be up to Mrs. Williamson if they're going to.
Yeah. Well, no, because she doesn't get the money in the will.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm guessing Williamson City is dead.
Well, Williamson City is dead, but I'm wondering about this building. Like, somebody owns this building.
Is this building not part of Williamson City?
No, this is that building that he was doing the presentation on about how they had.
I thought the presentation was on Williamson City. It was on something else?
It's on something else, yeah.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. That's right, yeah. It was the fancy apartment building where people could escape from their wives.
I did at one point wrote that down.
Well, he says that.
We're not sure what, like, it's a living unit where you can work and live, and we don't know what the wives will think about that, but wow. Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensetospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS. All right. So that's.
Yep. And that's the end of season one.
It's Blueprint for Murder. I think this might have been the least amount of time we've spent talking about a Columbo episode yet. In fact, we're coming in at a couple minutes shorter than the run of the episode.
Wow. Well, we got all of our rabbit holes out of the way before we started recording, I think.
And we didn't have Ryan Riddle on, so that helps.
That's true. Well, next one's going to be longer because it's an hour and a half episode.
Okay, so you're saying I should not watch that one in watch that one an hour before we have to record. Okay.
No. There are these random ones that are longer than standard episodes, and almost every time they don't need to be. So next time we will be back with the start of season two of Columbo. The episode Etude in Black, I believe, is the title.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, Etude in Black.